The stench of decay was stronger here. As Michael crawled between the silent booths and abandoned carnival games, searching for any supplies that weren't pungent with rot, he tried not to breathe in the scent of burgers and hot dogs long past their prime. He tried not to touch the stains that coated the floor and sucked at the bottom of his boots. He tried not to look at the bodies, the glassy-eyed, pale-faced, half-eaten bodies. The popcorn stand was where he remembered it. Michael pulled up the fabric cover and, after quickly checking that nothing was waiting for him within, he ducked inside. He got to work at what was becoming strangely routine. First, he pulled a bottle of grease spray from his chest pocket and coated the cabinet hinges. Then, as if taking hold of a newborn, he eased open the door, pausing whenever he made the slightest sound. Satisfied that he had alerted nothing to his position, he slipped off his backpack and lined it up with the edge of the cabinet. Finally, he slid as much of the contents as he could inside until he could only just force the zip closed. 5 bags of popcorn kernels. The expiry date was practically non-existent. They'd be good long after the other supplies had gone off. Hello, and welcome back to the Guild Podcast, the podcast of the Writers, Artists, and Readers Guild. I am your host, Chris Mary Holtzman, and today we have indie book veteran Joel R. Hunt as our special guest. It is a good chat. We talk about procrastinating, we talk about writing for commission, and even wrestling fiction. It is a good chat, and I hope you'll enjoy it. But before we dive into that, I have some exciting news for you. Launching this Saturday, that is tomorrow, if you're listening to this today, which is Friday, we are launching, me and a group of talented writers and readers are launching the Storytellers podcast, the Guild Storytellers. You can find it at the moment on Spotify, Anchor, and CastBox, and more places to come. Just search for the Guild Storytellers. It is an audio podcast where we read short stories, fiction from various authors, various genres. But go in and have a listen. It launches tomorrow. So find more information there. I guess without any further ado, let's listen to my talk with Joel R. Hunt. Joel Hunt, welcome to the Guild Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm a little bit nervous because this is my first time doing a podcast, but I'm very grateful for you having me.
Yes, and it's an honor. And as we could be open enough and say that this part is all déjà vu. This has happened before.
Territory.
Yes, but as I said, this is usually people's first podcast, I think mostly because I interview a lot of indie authors, and I mean, I have interviewed non-indie authors as well, but I think people like the experience of being the first interview. I try to do it a little bit relaxed, and then they reach out to other podcasters, and I think that works well.
Yeah, well, I think that is... Most authors that I've come across, and obviously speaking from my own experience, I think there is something very nice about people taking an interest, you know, in what you're doing and what you're creating.
No, I completely agree. What I'd like to touch on first of all is that we run in the same circles. I see your name coming up all the time in various groups that I am also in, but our path has rarely crossed. So most of the times you've just been a name. But and the sense that I've gotten is that you've been doing this for quite some time. That's just the sense I got, because it seems like you're always a name that people refer to. And it feels like, and is that true? Have you been doing this a long time?
I think in terms of the, as you say, the kind of circles that we run in, which are often, you know, I very much enjoy the publications and the groups that I'm working with now, but it's certainly not, you know, kind of big leagues, if that makes sense, is indie kind of publications. I think in those circles, I've probably been doing it longer than a number of people have, but not an enormous length of time. So let's see, in terms of proper publications, probably about 3 years.
Okay.
I see a lot of people saying, you know, they're on their first or second year. I was writing before that. My first ever publication was 2012.
Okay.
But limited success. I think I've certainly improved since then, which has increased the amount of publications and things that I've been involved in.
Yeah. And I think that what I've noticed now, because for me, I mean, I've been writing a long time, and we'll get into your past experience of just writing.
Yeah.
But I've been writing a long time, but I haven't really pursued publication until like a year ago. So now I've been and obviously once you start getting published, people are, I mean, you get more into it and you want to publish more, and then people see your name and you get some notifications. So how long have you actually been writing before you started pursuing publication?
I mean, I've always been writing to some extent, as far as I can remember. And I remember when I moved out of my parents' house, I remember finding a book from primary school. So I would have been about 5 years old, where I'd been writing my little stories. And obviously, they were absolute tripe. And my favourite one, I bring this up a lot. It's the earliest proper story I could find. I'm not sure if it's my first ever. But it was a story about three dogs, and their names were something stupid, like Pip, Smelly and Dirty, or something silly. And I drew little pictures of them with stink lines. And they went on an adventure. One of them fell over. Then there was a skeleton. Ooh, said the skeleton. Then they found treasure. Yeah. And that was the story. So evidently, finding treasure was how five-year-old Joel thought stories needed to end.
Yeah. Well.
In terms of what I suppose we would consider writing, I started my first... Well, I tried a novel around age 12. So there's... 16 years ago. It didn't get very far, but obviously laid the foundations, the kind of lessons that I learned from failing to write a novel at age 12.
Yeah.
You know, kind of inform how you learn to avoid those same mistakes going forward.
Yeah, I think if I remember the first, because we used to do, we had, I mean, obviously we had like writing in school, in elementary school, and we had this taskmaster of a British teacher. Her name was Janice Archer, and she looked like Margaret Thatcher with black hair. We didn't hate her, but she was stern, and she always told us, if corporal punishment was still allowed, this is what I would do to you. And every time you were naughty, that's what she would say. And she'd make us write stories, and we had to read them. And I don't know if this is very British. I mean, I didn't go to a British school, but I went to an English school. So there were both American and British teachers there. But she would force us to read them out loud to the class. And she would stand behind us. And if she felt that we didn't speak loud enough, she would take her knuckle and shove it into the small of our back, into our spine.
Wow. So, in my experience, fortunately, it's not what I consider the kind of British education experience outside of maybe Roald Dahl books. but definitely, so I was a teacher for a while.
Okay.
And I tried, there's a bit of a push at the moment, which I do think is in the right direction, which is away from forcing children to speak out loud in class.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of body of evidence that for certain children it's great and it builds confidence. Certain children absolutely hate it to the extent where you get people who have, for example, elective mutes, and it's essentially a form of trauma. You know, forcing people who are incredibly shy and wary of other people and of being the center of attention, and forcing them to kind of bare their soul in front of people who possibly bully them and so on.
Yeah.
I would say reading work out loud is definitely, in my experience, an element of British education. And it's occurred in every school that I've been in and taught in. But I tried to take the approach of allowing children to volunteer to read their work or to read from the class book, rather than shoving my knuckles into their spine.
Well, it was, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to say that it probably made me the man I am today, but I don't know. I don't know what I would have been like. But I mean, the first story that I wrote, speaking of craptacular books, stories, mine was about this detective that goes to a lake where there's a supposed monster, and every chapter ended with the detective having breakfast, which I thought was an excellent way to end every single chapter. And it was like, and then they had tea. Was how it ended. Every chapter ended, and it was I don't know, it seems like your story, because I'm reminded of a story that just recently came out, a horror story about dogs, like a pack of dogs during a zombie attack, where like the world has been like completely devastated by zombies, and the dogs are the main characters and how they deal with that.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah, I can't remember who I just, I think it was it sponsored some podcast that I listened to. So, but yeah, I think there are a couple of stories that I wrote when I was between the ages of 7 and 12, when I wasn't spending my time doing He-Man fan fiction. that there is some quality too, but
in all seriousness, I do think that fan fiction for a lot of people is a very good tool to kind of spread your wings and develop. And I didn't do strictly fan fiction, but what I did do when I was kind of early in the transition from inexcusably terrible writer to sometimes not so bad writer, I was involved in a lot of roleplay forums doing, you know, kind of fantasy settings and things like that. And after Harry Potter came out, there were a lot of magic school roleplays.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so even though I didn't explicitly write kind of, oh, this is my version of you know, Harry falling in love with Draco, myself and my friends essentially just ripped off other settings, whatever settings were kind of popular at the time, made our own characters, and just never acknowledged the fact that all of these characters were running around what was evidently Hogwarts. It wasn't called Hogwarts, and none of the teachers were the same name, and no one ever mentioned the fact that it was obviously the same world. So I did a lot of that, which I think, I suppose, taking the base of someone who has put the effort in already, it kind of takes some of the load off of you, and allows you to explore different areas of writing without the pressure of, I guess, doing it all from scratch.
Yeah. And I mean, isn't that what like fantasy literature in a lot of ways is? Because if you look at, say, like, I write fantasy myself, and I mean, obviously I borrow everything from Tolkien, or Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman, all these people that have come before. And because everybody knows, I mean, when you read a fantasy book, you expect them to be walking on a dusty road. You expect your characters to be traveling somewhere, because nobody travels as much as a fantasy character.
Yes.
You expect there to be an inn. I only have to say that it's an inn, and it's called The Wounded Hog, and people know exactly what that inn looks like. So, I mean, there's definitely a boon to that, and I think fan fiction allows an author to explore that, to borrow people other tropes.
Yes, definitely.
And I think that's probably a very important process, because what before I started submitting stuff, I started writing, and this might sound odd to you, wrestling fiction.
I tell you, weirdly enough, one of my best friends is massively into the kind of wrestling fan fiction community. I say community. I'm presuming there is a community because I know he interacts with other people who write the same stuff. I have no knowledge of it other than the fact that it exists. But it interests me that you say that because I know someone else who does exactly that.
And the thing was, I don't know that there actually is a actual community, or if it's the same like four guys
Yeah,
that do it. Because when I put out, I mean, because I made a homepage and everything, and I had like a roster page and did several different stories. You know, I took characters, and I strictly basically watch Impact Wrestling, which is a minor federation, and I just felt like I want to know more about these characters, and this 2 hour show is just not giving me enough. So I started writing my own stuff and started incorporating like these independent talents, pretending that they were coming in playing different roles. And I did get some interest in it actually, and even some wrestlers. They were just like, especially the wrestlers that I was writing about, they're just like, I didn't even know that this was a thing.
That's cool.
But I think that gave me the courage actually, because I put that out on my own website, and it was like, I think my sister said that once. My sister, who's a musician, she said, when I get a commission, it's not as daunting as when I do something of my own, because I don't have to be responsible for it in the same way. I don't know, do you feel the same way? I mean, do you do commissions at all when writing, or?
So I 100% agree with her kind of outlook there. The one thing that stops me sharing it from my personal experience is I've done a very limited number of I hesitate to call them commissions because usually what it is friends asking me to write something for them. I agree to do it. And then they insist that they throw some money my way because of the work that I put. So I hesitate over calling them commissions, but I have written work to someone else's specification and had them give me money. And what I've found is that I am absolutely terrible at, I guess, sticking to the timescales of it because I work very much based on inspiration, and I've had to in order to get the work published that I have got published, I've had to rein in my desire to hop onto different projects because I would never finish a single story before losing inspiration and wanting to work on something else. And what I've found is that when someone gives me the exact specifications of what they would like me to write, even if they don't tell me necessarily exactly what happens in the story, they just say, right, these are the characters I want you to include, this is how I want it to end. I find that limitation often it becomes like a job, and that drains my enthusiasm very quickly. And then I start going, oh, what if I did a different project with a flying monkey? And so I don't do them very much.
I completely relate, and I envy writers that can sit down and just work on one piece
Oh,
and
yeah.
get it done, because I cannot do that. I'm working on one piece now that is basically a story that's already, I mean, a novel that's basically already been sold, and I have like a certain deadline when it has to be done. But I see these calls for various anthologies, and I'm just like, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Because, and I'm sure, I don't know if you agree with this, but starting a story is probably the best thing
Oh, yeah,
to get it started.
absolutely. If if I could somehow make a living off of the first 15% of a story, I would quit my job and I would just spend every day. I'm pretty sure I could come up with a new story. If not every day, then every 2 days.
Yeah.
I could come up with a new story. I love world building. Fleshing out characters. I could, if there was someone who was a great writer but for some reason lacked any imagination, I could just throw ideas at them, have them write it, and we'd split the money. That'd be my dream world.
Yeah, I would like that too. And I'm in the same in my professional, my day job, is that I'm always like the guy that comes up with ideas, but I need somebody to take it. I need somebody to take the ball and run with it, because I won't, you know what? People will say, that's a great idea. Can you do that? Just like, no, I'm good.
I had the exact same thing where I even wrote out a kind of specification of vaguely how this suggestion might work for my workplace. Sent it to my boss. My boss replied, that sounds good. Can you explain in detail how it would work? Just not replied. Because it's like, well, no, I don't. I want someone to implement this.
Yeah.
I don't want to design it. That sounds really tiresome and difficult.
I just really want to get credit at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, well, I think that's... Yeah, I envy a lot of people. And then you keep getting people that throw stuff on you. Like David Green is very good at that. He'll just like tag you and just like, hey, you should write something for this. Closes in 2 weeks. And just like, yeah, I should write something for that. Let me just close this document and work on this. plot, nothing, just...
I'm in a really... interesting position from, I guess, the development of, if I can call it my career or whatever you might refer to at this stage in my life, as a writer. I'm involved in something like 4 invite anthologies, which it really makes me kind of very proud and honoured that people have thought to ask me to take part. And they're open enough that it's still, you know, it doesn't feel like a commission. It feels like an anthology that I've seen and gone, yeah, I'd like to, you know, submit to this. But it is interesting because I'm now in a position where if I back out, you know, I'm letting people down. Whereas some anthology that it's just up there online, they won't even know that I was ever considering it if I end up getting, you know, 20% in and thinking I'm not bothered anymore. So I've got like a number of stories that I have to finish. And it's a strange place for me to be in. It's not something that I'm used to. So I'm kind of navigating that at the moment and trying to make sure I'm not letting people down and that I'm hitting these deadlines. But somewhat against my nature.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've realized, I think, with you know, answering certain calls, is that I work very well with that. I work well with a clear deadline. Because there was one story I was going to submit to. It was like magical realism. And I was just like, well, I'm working. Oh, this sounds good. I had a story. I actually had like a base for a story that I'd worked on before in a creative writing class. And I was just like, well, I can kind of tweak this so that there's a magical realism in it. And then they extended the deadline. I mean, I was close to being done and I had ample time to have somebody read through it, everything like that. And then they extended the deadline by like a month and a half. And I'm just like, well, then I can do something else. I'm almost done with this.
Yes.
And then what ended up happening was that I only had like 2 days left to finish it because I realized that I hadn't done it and it wasn't read through, nothing. I just sent it in and it got rejected, and rightly so.
Yeah. I've done almost exactly the same thing where someone's extended a deadline And I've thought, oh, that's great. That gives me plenty of time. And then you end up submitting, you know, in the last day or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not a sensible approach, but that's exactly what you just described. You know, it's that feeling of thinking that you've got forever to do it in.
Yeah, and then I think, because I've also been, you know, invited to write in some anthologies, and what worked best for me was just finishing it. You know,
yeah,
just like sitting down, doing it, like that's the only thing you do. Get it done, get it out there, like the first draft, be the first one to have the first draft out. Because also I found that if you're doing something that's collaborative, where a lot of people are dependent on each other, what is happening, if you set your standard first, everybody has to it has to follow you. And I think I learned that at the university, you know, when you had to do like you had to discuss, you do group discussions for 2 hours with like a mentor that would look, you know, grade you, you know, hit it first and everybody has to follow you.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a really good mindset.
So that, or they could just ignore your story completely and just like, well, that happens in another place. So we're not affected by what happens in your story.
But I think even though, like, even if they ignore the kind of content of the story, I think, as you say, you do even subconsciously kind of set a standard. And I think I'm really interested in seeing how these invite anthologies go, because, as I say, it's not something that's happened to me that often.
No.
And I would worry, and I want to stress, by the way, on the off chance, as you say, we move in similar circles, on the off chance that anyone who is working alongside me on an invite anthology, this is purely speculative, this is not a commentary on anyone. But I would worry if I were running an invite anthology, if even one person kind of doesn't submit great quality stuff, if you've invited them, you know, what scope does that give you then to reject what they've provided? And I do wonder whether setting out, kind of having someone get in there really quickly with the deadline and sharing, you know, good quality work early, I think certainly it would spur me on if I saw someone doing that in the group to think like, oh God, you know, I don't want to be the last person to,
no,
you know, get everything in order. So I think it does, in terms of deadlines and in terms of the quality of the work, I think it spurs on other people in the group and sets that standard.
Yeah. Have you ever experienced being part of an anthology and I know that this is probably, and you know, once again, you don't want to insult anybody that is listening to the podcast, but I mean, have you ever experienced like reading stories in an anthology that you're part of and get the sensation that these are just not up to snuff, they're not up to the same or I mean, even if you're always your own worst critic, but you can tell if a story is not on the same level, even if your level is low, but it's like and you kind of like, what does this say about my story?
At 100%, and thankfully it's not something that's happened very often. I can honestly say the vast majority of stuff that I've been published in, I think, is at least decent indie quality. There have been some that I've been involved in that I genuinely think are kind of professional quality in terms of the other writers that are in it, in terms of the you know, quality of the editing and publishing and so on. Most have been good. There have been a couple, and obviously I'm not going to say names, and I, you know, but there have been a few where I've read some of the other stories in it, and as you say, it made me then less proud of that story, because I kind of feel like, well, it sounds awful, but it's like, well, if story A got in, obviously story B was going to get in, you know, whereas when I read an anthology I'm in where almost all of the writing almost all the stories are fantastic, I think, bloody hell, you know, oh, it did well to scrape into this one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the same. And then you read stories in a book that you were reading, like in an anthology that rejected you, and you can just like, yeah, I can see why this story didn't.
Oh, yes. Pass. I mean, sometimes even without, like, sometimes I'll be really disappointed with a rejection. I'll stew on it for a week or so, and then I'll go back to it. And I'm like, oh, God, they made the right decision. This is not as good as I thought it was.
No. Absolutely. So when you started, what was the first story that you sold, even though on our level of indie writing, we don't always sell stories.
Yeah. Yeah. So the very first one I mentioned, the first one was published was 2012. That was not exactly equivalent, because it was a contest rather than, you know, a kind of open submission call. It was for certain age brackets. So I was a little younger back then, as I think most people were in the past.
Yeah.
But it was an all right story. I think it was called The Statue. It was a kind of like, I did a fable style, you know, kind of story. Mm. And that was in an anthology called Objection to Perfection. Then I had a long gap of nothing. And oddly enough, the first story that I kind of think shows me getting somewhere as a writer wasn't actually one that was published. It was one that did very well online.
Mm-hmm.
So I started getting very heavily into No Sleep.
Yeah.
And my first story that ever got over 1,000 upvotes, for me, that's kind of like the little flag in my timeline of, oh, maybe I have a chance with this stuff. And it was a story called The First Parents. And I think it only did as well as it did because I accidentally reminded a lot of people of Tommy Taffy. And at that time, I was really into No Sleep, but I wasn't, I hadn't kind of earned my No Sleep pedigree. You know, I didn't know at that time the famous No Sleep stories. So I'd never heard of Tommy Taffy. And for anyone listening who isn't aware, the first Tommy Taffy story was called The Third Parent. So there have been a couple more, and I think it's a novel now, but it did really well anyway. So I wander in with my completely unrelated story, having never read The Third Parent, and called it The First Parent. And I had a load of people saying, thankfully they were nice about it, because I think they knew, or they could sense that it wasn't an intentional, you know, ploy.
Mm.
But I had a load of people commenting, saying, oh, I was expecting a Tommy Taffy prequel. So that might be why it did well, because people came for one thing, and then thankfully thought it was good enough to stick around afterwards.
Mm.
But yeah, so that was probably 3 years, maybe 4 years ago now. I don't know exactly when I submitted that. Coming up to 4 years, it must be, actually.
Yeah. So you're part of that whole No Sleep crew then, because that's also like a circle. And when I started, actually, when I reintroduced this podcast, before I basically only interviewed people that were published through more traditional publishers. But once I started moving into the more indie circles and stuff like that, there was a big group of No Sleepers. And that is kind of where you cut your teeth, or?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Definitely for the horror that I write, which, you know, some I do branch out, and there are some other subreddits and other groups that help me with, for example, more with, you know, fantasy or sci-fi or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I owe pretty much all of my horror experience and the kind of early boosts to No Sleep. It isn't, you know, I've kind of drifted away unintentionally from the community just by kind of necessity with trying to establish myself in publishing means that I can't share my stories on Reddit, because then most places it's invalidated. You can't
Yeah. You
know, submit something that is available for free online. So by necessity, I've stopped sharing stuff on work on No Sleep. And because I'm getting more involved in other groups, I don't have as much time to read, you know, stories on No Sleep because I'm, you know, reading one of my friends' work, or I'm, you know, reading anthologies that I've been submitted in, or whatever else. But it is on my radar to go back, and after my current slew of submissions are over, presuming nothing else kind of catches my eye afterwards, my next personal project is hopefully going to be a big return to No Sleep. Hopefully triumphant, but who knows? Maybe I will get no views at all. But yeah, I have got a desire to go back into the No Sleep community soon. Mm.
I feel somehow that I hear less about No Sleep now than I did just, I think, maybe February, March or something like that. I think there was a lot of No Sleep, and there was a lot of, in the various author groups, there was a lot of chatter about No Sleep, and now it's kind of died down. So
I tell you what I think it is. I think it's almost a victim of its own success. Because you start getting certain quite what I consider big No Sleep names. So and some of them I know you've interviewed. So you've got, you know, LP Hernandez, you've got Tobias Wade and Blair Daniels, and some of these, when I was getting involved, these were like your celebrities of No Sleep.
Yeah.
And now they're getting somewhere, you know, and they're doing stuff. So they don't have, it's kind of similar to me, although I don't put myself in the same bracket. When you start having success in a commercial sense, you might still want to take part, but you don't have the time or the energy to still get involved. And I think what's happened from what I can gather from the kind of little visits that I've had, certainly you've still got a lot of talent in No Sleep at the moment. But I think a lot of the big names have kind of drifted away from it. And so I think hopefully what we'll find is that over the coming months, or even it may have happened already and just I've not been there to see it, hopefully you'll get new No Sleep celebrities kind of rising through the ranks, you know, as they gain experience and kind of fill the void that bigger authors left behind. But that from what I can gather this year, I think the mobilization, and you got things like the what was, when it first began, the No Sleep Writers Guild, that now I think just calls itself the Writers Guild, the same Facebook group, and a few other groups like that, that have kind of, you know, people have migrated away from No Sleep, I think has happened this year, quiet it down.
Mm-hmm. Are you still there?
Oh, sorry, I cut off.
Yeah, you just cut off when you finished talking, so that's fine, I think.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying, so I think there's just been a migration away from No Sleep, and I think that's possibly why this year it's settled down a bit.
Yeah, but I've also noticed that there is a greater increase in indie publishers. Because you have, well, Michelle River with Erie River, and you have N.M. Brown with Nocturnal Sirens, and Kyle Harrison, and so there's a bigger market for writers to actually, or bigger opportunities for writers to get published in book form than the internet.
Yeah, and I think really it probably boils down to what people want from their writing, and obviously it's not exclusive to one thing, like, oh, I only want money from my writing or whatever. But I think if, as what obviously my hope in the next few years, in the next 5 years, whatever, is to hopefully be a full-time, or at the very least a part-time author that I can, you know, maybe not be working full-time outside of writing. And so that, as much as No Sleep was a kind of very helpful community for me, and that I owe it a lot, it's something that I was never going to get just from No Sleep.
No.
And likewise, you get people who aren't necessarily bothered by thousands of, you know, upvotes and that kind of recognition, but they love nothing more than having their words in an actual, you know, physical book that they can put on their shelf and be proud of.
Mm.
And with a very few small exceptions, you don't get that from No Sleep either. Whereas people who are content, you know, doing it as a hobby and being involved in that community, which is where I was a few years ago, I think No Sleep and similar communities are still, you know, they still fit, tick that box. So I think it depends what people want. And I think there's, as you say, there's all these groups now, all these kind of indie publishers that are offering, you know, an amount of money, that are offering these physical copies that people can have and be proud of, that provide something that you don't get just from these purely online communities.
No, and I think that being able to, because oftentimes when you write a query letter for a novel to a publisher, they want you to write down your writing credits, and I think having your name already in an anthology, going through a process where people, you know, where an editor or a publisher said, yeah, this deems that this is good enough, it will carry more weight for a bigger publisher than maybe writing for an online community.
Oh, absolutely. And as much as I am, I'm still very proud of the stories of mine that did well on No Sleep, and when I'm talking to people on a more casual basis, I'll if they ask, like, oh, what have you done? I often go back to my No Sleep stories to share. I have never put my No Sleep or other free online stories, I've never put them on a bibliography.
No.
Because it just doesn't feel right. Like, as you say, I suppose there's something that feels more earned about having kind of passed the test of the editor, the publisher, or whoever it was who looked at your story. And the fact that not every story could necessarily be published in that work, so there was some process of something that you passed, you know, some test that you passed, essentially, and that it just carries more weight than something that any number of people can put a story online.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my wrestling fiction website is great proof of that. it is enough with a free Wix site and you're off and running. Of course, I would have never called myself a writer at that point.
Yeah, it was same for me. Yeah.
So, but are you, I mean, so that's the online stuff when we talked about the anthologies. Have you had a full-length novel published, or are you working towards that end?
So I've not yet had any solo books published. I'm working towards, hopefully tail end of this year, self-publishing my first anthology. And I've got the content, I think right now, as of this moment, I think I've got the content for certainly three anthologies, possibly four.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, I need to go through and do edits and formatting and all that. And then I also need to actually, God, sort covers and all yeah. that stuff that I have no experience at the moment in doing. In terms of novels, funnily enough, it was kind of crucial to my kind of writing journey. I joined up with a writer's group that my brother, who's also a writer, and a couple of his friends who were interested in kind of becoming writers. We started a writing group together, and when we started it, we were all trying for novels.
Yeah.
And I got a year and a half in, I got 50,000 words into my novel, and I just had this realization that I'm not good enough yet to handle the project that I've taken on board. It was stupidly ambitious for a debut novel, you know, multiple perspective characters and in a very a very different world that needed a lot of exposition with plots, you know, spanning several books. And it, I think it's doable. It's something that I hope one day to return to. But I just, 50,000 words in, I just kind of looked at it and I thought, I don't have the skill right now to do this the justice that, that I want to do it. So I forced myself to shelve it. I tried to start it again a couple of times and didn't really get anywhere. So that's now, I've still got it all, but it's going to gather in digital dust until I feel that I'm at that stage. And I think probably what I will do before going back to that is I've got a few novel concepts that are a lot more streamlined, you know, single character perspectives, more traditional stories that are completed within the space of one novel, shock horror, that hopefully I can kind of cut my teeth on those and get the experience, because it's a whole different world to writing short stories, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I wish somehow that I had the self realization when I was writing my first novel to realize that this isn't good. I don't have the skills to do this. And then for some reason, having the balls to send it to Tor of all publishers, like probably one of the single biggest fantasy publishers in the world, and somehow thinking that, oh, this was probably an atrocious query letter as well. No writing credits at all. not even, because I mean, I think I must have submitted this when I was like maybe 25 or something like that. So it's, you know, 15 years ago. And I was just like, you know, oh, there's an off chance that this, they might take it. But of course they didn't. And wisely so, after actually having now submitted it in revamped form and professionally edited, by the way. I paid for it to get edited. And even beta read, because nobody had read it or anything. It was just, and I wish I had known that then. And also, I mean, I always assumed, and I've said that before on this podcast, I always assumed I was a fantasy writer. That was my first love, but then realized that I was also, I mean, in many ways, maybe a better horror writer and better at the short form. But I think you, just like with the No Sleep, I think you cut your teeth in different ways.
Definitely, yeah.
And I think today it's like, maybe you do, it's the internet community, the writing community, it's short stories, you know, be them drabbles or flash fiction or even fan fiction. Then maybe indie anthologies, maybe an indie novel if you're lucky, and then you can move on to the big publishers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think you'll get a few people who manage to have a kind of breakaway early success, and you know, genuinely it's fantastic if that is something that can happen for people. But I think it's far more realistic that for the vast majority of us, we need these kind of few years, maybe even few decades, you know, who knows, of building that experience and making mistakes and learning from them, hopefully. and, you know, trying, like you just described, I think it's crucial to try different styles. And what I find really interesting is reading on these kind of online groups, reading people who are better at longer form than shorter form, because I think the inverse is true for me. I think I find it easier to I can waffle on, but I find it easier to wrap up a story in a short kind of amount of words rather than crafting a long complex plot, which for me is challenging because it becomes convoluted and so on, and I never finish the damn thing. Whereas you're getting people who have published several novels saying, oh, I'm so proud to get this, you know, one drabble published because it was such a challenge for me to do a drabble, and I find that you know, fascinating, and it kind of nice to know that there are people who, you know, struggle with different elements, but are still trying and learning and, you know, developing their craft. So what is my kind of uphill struggle to build up to writing a novel is their uphill struggle to condense to yeah. down to a drabble.
Yeah, drabbles are fun.
Oh, definitely. If anyone is listening to this who has not yet done a drabble, I definitely would recommend you give them a try. And there are plenty of, there must be now, you know, dozens or hundreds of publishers who are, if not exclusively looking for drabbles, at very least, you know, having the occasional drabble anthology.
Yeah.
So I think there's plenty of opportunities for that.
Yeah. Well, Joel, our time is unfortunately winding down. First of all, what do you have on the docket? What is your next sort of release or just released?
So, funnily enough, especially because this obviously was originally scheduled for yesterday, there's an anthology that came out yesterday called Full Metal Horror 3, The Unknown, mm-hmm. by Zombie Pirate Publishing. And I've got a story in that called Laker Come Home, about Laker, the Russian space dog.
Yeah.
And then next month, you've mentioned Eerie River, and we've appeared together in Forgotten Ones.
Yes, we have.
The Drabble Anthology. Eerie River have... Oh, this is all from me. I forgot the name of it.
Is it Calls from the Sea?
Or is it... Close, thank you, from the sky. It calls from the sky. Mm. Thank you for that. I was up for a beating if I forgot that. And can I be cheeky and ask to plug my brother for a second as well?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. He's just got his new website up, which is floor54.co.uk, and that's the word 54. It's a horror project. I think I am absolutely loving it, and I'm not saying that just because he's my brother. It is this ongoing kind of developing world that he's doing in the setting of Floor 54. And I definitely recommend that for any kind of No Sleep style horror fans.
Okay, we'll check that out. We'll put all of the links and everything like that, links to books and links to your website in the show notes. But you can mention it now. If anybody wants to come in contact with you or find out what it is you're doing or read some of your No Sleep stories or what have you, where can they find you?
Excellent. So I'll just prattle a couple off if I can. So I've got my own website, which is a little ugly at the moment, so I do apologize, but it's my first one, which is joelrhuntauthor.wordpress.com. I've got a subreddit on No Sleep, which is JRH Evil Inc., all one word. Mm-hmm. And then I've got my Twitter handle, which is Joel R. Hunt 1, because someone had already taken Joel R. Hunt, and that will haunt me forever.
Well, you can get back and probably get like an official check mark or something like that. Eventually.
Well,
Joel, it's been a delight, and we'll have you back sometime when when you have your first novel out or your first anthology, so you can plug that proper.
That'd be wonderful. And thank you very much for having me on for my first ever podcast. And you've made it a very nice experience for me. Thank you.
Here's to many more.
Thank you.
Welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It was a good chat, a good back and forth, and I think a lot of times it's fun, as I've said before, it's fun when you kind of have a good connection with the person that you interview, and I think Joel and I had that, definitely. Don't forget to go check out all of Joel's stuff on the internet. The links are all in the show notes. I would also like to thank John Haltman for providing music today. I would thank Joel Hunt for being a guest. And I'd like to thank all you listeners for listening and tuning into the podcast. Don't forget, we have a lot of things going on. We have After Hours with Tim Mendes. He has talked to both me, David Green, and N.M. Brown, and will be talking to Michelle River, who we've also interviewed on this podcast. Don't forget to check out the Guild Storytellers, and don't forget to check out Easing the Reader, a reread of The Wheel of Time that I and David Green do. And don't forget to pick up my book, my debut novel, Face of Fear, available now from Breaking Rules Publishing. If you like the podcast, leave a comment, tweet it out, Facebook it out, share it, what have you. It helps us a lot. And we bring this to you free of charge. So a little click, that'll help. Thank you very much. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you next time.